Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahana Vinyam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastama Vidvishavahai Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay. Page 24. Here someone may say, the conflicting claims of these different philosophies will certainly bewilder the living entities' minds. Fearing that someone would say this, the author of the sutras proceeds to explain that there is no real conflict among these seemingly conflicting views. They are separate aspects of a single philosophy. He says, Sarvesham Samanjasam Satvata Vijnanasya Brahmatvat Bhavat Pramana Sadbhavatcha. All are true because the evidence of scripture is always true, and because the seeming conflict does not bewilder those who know the truth. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. All these sages are correct, right? In other words, they're quoting different sages and their opinions in the matter. So the point is being given is evidence of the scripture means it's based on the bona fide scripture. There is no conflict like that. So those who understand the truth, they don't see any conflict. They don't see that there's a difference. It's just different aspects of the same thing. Right? That's the. So Manu makes that very, very clear also, is that even though the scriptures all say these different things, they're all correct. The point is what are you trying to do? That's why you'll choose one particular form over the other. Right? But being able to understand them all as correct simultaneously, that's the actual standard. Does that make sense? All these sages are correct because those who know the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and understand that these conflicting views are aspects of single philosophy are not bewildered. The distinctions observed in these doctrines are only apparent for these doctrines are always harmonious to each other's. Right? Distinctions are apparent, means you're seeing something, but it's other than that, it's not actually there. You know, you're just seeing different aspects, like the arm is different from the nose, but it doesn't mean that it's not the same body. Right? Like that. Because But some of the Kanishtha followers of the great sages raise controversies due to their incomplete understanding. That was the discussion this morning. Right? It means those who understand, they don't see the conflict. Right? But those who don't, the Kanishthas, they'll make it into different groups, different parties, different understandings, different practices and all that. Yes?
Is he calling other three sampradayas Kanishthas?
No. He's saying some of the Kanishtha followers of the great sages. That means you have, the great sages means all the different philosophical aspects. Some of them, they will make this. You know, like this morning, all those discussions of the differences. Some make that. Not all. Does that make sense? Some make that. So it's not that there's a problem. you know. It's just that one understanding what is happening, that is the point. It means if, in other words, if one is saying externally, then one could say, yes, some preachers use more technical terminology than Prabhupada will use. But if technical terminology is the actual symptom of advancement, then, you know, then there may be something wrong with Rupa Goswami's explanation, because he said, you know, it's not grammatical, it means it's not language, right? Is devotional service isn't based on language or dependent upon language. That's one of the things. It's not dependent on karma, it's not dependent on jnana, it's not dependent on language, like that. So if that was the symptom, then, but we're not defining, it's just more technical, yes. But the Prabhupada has given those technical words into nice English. That's what Bhaktisiddhanta says, what he talks with you. And then where there isn't something, then you leave it in the Sanskrit. The Prabhupada's so expert, many of the things, he's not like spontaneous devotional service. Occasionally Prabhupada will use Raganuga, right, to give it its more, you know, clear that you know what he's talking about. But most of the time it's a spontaneous devotional service. So when you put it into that, it loses some of, it becomes, you know, more friendly. If I say Raganuga Bhakti, Raganuga Sadhana, then it sounds like something more special and rigorous and all that. So then it gives that feeling that it's, there's more advancement, more. Does that make sense? So you could say yes, using more technical language, but the point is saying the same thing. You know, whether I say it's an apple or I say it's a fruit. You know, but if you're making fruit salad, you need fruit. You know, so fruit's good. Fruit makes the point. And then those who have more of an understanding, then they understand. You know, that maybe apple. Is that? In Srimad Bhagavatam 11.22.4, the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, all such philosophers spoke under the shelter of my mystic potency. Thus they could say anything without contradicting the truth. Right, so he's speaking about all the different things. Like, so they're all speaking these because there's going to be followers that want, there's going to be people that want something other than the absolute truth. So they worded their philosophies in such a way that you could end up in your mind with a different philosophy. Right? Just like the speaker of Shankya. There's an atheistic Shankya, an atheistic Kapila. So it seems like it's a different philosophy. But Bhagavatam gives Devahuti's Kapila. And it's completely atheistic. It's Vaishnav, you know, understanding of Bhagavan. Right? So it's just a matter of how you word it. How your presentation. But otherwise there's no difference, because like we said, the Lord is simultaneously one and different from his energies. So there's not a problem. Yeah. So these great sages under the Lord's mystic potency are speaking all these, so that you have six major schools that then people can be, either see them in the proper light or be bewildered by them. These seemingly contradictory views are correct also because the previously quoted passages of Shruti Shastra, passages that are evidence for these different views, must all be correct. In the Taittiriya Upanishad 3.1.1 it is said, all created beings emanate from the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By His power they remain alive. They attain Him at the end. This verse serves as praman for all three doctrines. It proves the Advaita, since there is no other principle in existence besides Brahman. It establishes dualism as well, because the sentient and non-sentient are real and not false like a dream. It also establishes Dvaita-Advaita, because non-dualism is perceived in the beginning and at the end, and dualism is perceived in the middle. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is it's just, they're giving the philosophy, but then the problem is those who don't quite understand it create it into something separate. But the point is Vedanta will be giving the clearest explanation, most complete. Because Nyaya is just defining, you know, what is and what's not. But it doesn't go beyond. It accepts the Supreme and that he is always existing. But it doesn't actually talk, it doesn't talk about him as a person, they just as the controller. But you don't get into dealing with him actually at all. Does that make sense? So by not doing that, then the neophyte will come to the conclusion that, you know, God is impersonal, or, you know, impersonal realization is the topmost, or anything like that. No, they're just explaining an aspect. So there's no contradiction, yes.
So it means that those all six schools in the principle are Vaishnava friendly?
They are if you actually understand, if you understand Vaishnava philosophy. But the point is whatever they're trying to say is so clearly and nicely said in Vedanta, so there's no need to approach them for understanding the philosophy. They have specific aspects that they bring out that are useful, like how to discuss things and analyze things logically. Then Nyaya does that. But as a philosophy, it's whatever's covered in Nyaya already is covered in the Vedanta. You understand? Karma Mimamsa, it gives very nice analyzation how to identify what's important. Right? You know, so the opening statements, the closing statements, that's one way to tell what's the main theme, what's important, what's repeated, what's glorified, what's brought out as unique. You know what I'm saying? These are ways you tell, so that you would get from Karma Mimamsa. You know, so different things, you know, Shankya shows how to analyze the creation, you know, and understand how the creation is folding and unfolding, so we can understand how our consciousness has become covered and how to uncover it. Does that make sense? You know, we discussed this point, you know, the atomic theory, everything's manifest, it's all atom, you know, just the manifestation of atoms put together. But then they dissolve and the atoms go apart and it just goes back into its original elements. It all goes back into Earth. So there's nothing to get attached to. Whatever we see here is temporary. You know what I'm saying? So that aspect we also discuss. But to make that as a total philosophy, you know, and that your ultimate goal is to get all the atoms back into their original state, then that's basically kind of useless. Does that make sense? In the introduction to Sri Ishapanishad, Srila Prabhupada explains the same truth. This is the Vedic principle. We accept it. Vedic principles are accepted as axiomatic truth. For there cannot be any mistake. This is acceptance. For instance, in India, cow dung is accepted as pure, and yet cow dung is the stool of an animal. In one place you'll find the Vedic injunction that if you touch stool, you'll have to take a bath immediately. But in another place it is said that the stool of the cow is pure. If you smear cow dung in an impure place, that place becomes pure. With our ordinary sense, we could argue this is contradictory. Actually, it is contradictory from the ordinary point of view. But it is not false, it is fact. So the ordinary point of view, it is contradictory. But the Shastras aren't speaking from the ordinary point of view. So some may say, well, that's not logical. Yeah, from ordinary logic, it's not. But for transcendental, it can be both. In the purport to Mantra 5, it is stated, here is a description of some of the Supreme Lord's transcendental activities executed by his inconceivable potencies. The contradictions given here prove the inconceivable potencies of the Lord. He walks and he does not walk. Ordinarily, if someone can walk, it is illogical to say he cannot walk. But in reference to God, such a contradiction simply serves to indicate his inconceivable power. With our limited fund of knowledge, we cannot accommodate such contradictions. And therefore, we conceive the Lord in terms of our limited powers of understanding. For example, the impersonalist philosophers of the Mayavad school accept only the Lord's impersonal activities and reject his personal feature. But the members of the Bhagavad school, adopting the perfect conception of the Lord, accept his inconceivable potencies and thus understand these both personal and impersonal. So, you can see the reason they can't accommodate the twos are working with mundane intelligence. So, and they're considered, you know, very scholarly, very academic people. Right? You know, for them, grammar makes sense. You know, like this. And that has a lot of contradictions in it. But that makes sense. But so they're able to reconcile so many elements, but they can't reconcile the Lord because he can only be understood with spiritual intelligence. Yes?
What is meant by impersonal activities? Because it seems that impersonal signifies just Brahman.
Good catch there. Impersonal activities. This whole creation is the impersonal activities of the Lord. Right, because that pillar, it just represents the Lord's strength, you know, or aesthetics, or, you know, some other, whatever is the element that you're looking at. That's Brahman, because what does that mean? Strength. Krishna is all strength, okay, but who has that all strength? So it's just strength itself, that's the impersonal aspect. So that's why he's simultaneously impersonal and the personal at the same time. Because the personal has qualities, but the qualities are only manifest in the form. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the two go together. So this idea is that you have personal, it has no connection with the impersonal. Impersonal has no connection with the personal. That's wrong. That's because in our mundane intelligence, that's how we'd work it out. You can't have something that's impersonal and personal at the same time. But with God, his inconceivable potency, that's the way it is. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why we say Brahman is saguna, with qualities. So there's the activities of Brahman. But the creation, there's no rasa going on there between us, therefore it's impersonal. Him, he's interacting with his yoga maya. You know what I'm saying? So even there is the Brahman element, still there's the personal element of he interacting with his internal potency. You know what I'm saying? So, because the ultimate cause and the formal cause, you can say that's impersonal. Because all you're saying, ultimate cause, you're not saying, you know, him as a person or why he's doing it. It just means the masculine principle, the feminine principle. Right? But at the same time, is they interact. So they interact as people. You know? But at the same time as they can interact on the platform of Brahman. But it's the people who are interacting on the platform of Brahman. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense.
Why the energies they're interacting with them?
Yeah, but they're non-different from their energies. So they're interacting, but they're not. You know, it's just like we were saying. Yeah, it's always so... there's so many examples you can use, but somehow or another when you're giving these personal, if you deal with the conjugal rasa, it always, generally everybody catches it. Yeah, you know, that's the thing about it. It's like, you know, the boy is there, the girl is there, the man, the woman is there. They're not interacting, but they've told their messengers and they're interacting. So it's their energy, so it's going on. Things, arrangements are being made, this and that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
You said also, you know, like when a businessman is saying, yeah, my money's working for me.
Yeah, like because it's his potency. So he's not, a businessman is non-different from his money, but it's still he's different.
So when it's just the money generating profit on his own, it's his personal activity.
Yeah, so it's still his activity, but it's impersonal because it's not, the person who is the Lord of the energy is not being defined. And their reasons why they're doing and this and that. No, that's just, you're just taking that. Because if you say, well, why is this Brahman here and creating this? Then it's his mercy. Okay? So the Lord his mercy upon. Yeah, because he knows it'll make profit and like that. So he is a person that's decided, puts his potencies work.
Yes. But the Lord can appreciate the Lord's personal activities, but not the personal
No, they can't, because for them there's no distinction. They're very limited in their ability, because impersonal means nothing. You know, so that's why they're technically voidists. They're not actually impersonalists. Because if you're working on the Brahman platform, it's transcendental. So the point of Brahman is its transcendentalness, not its lack of form. You know what I'm saying? And what's special about Brahman? There's no form, or it's transcendental, right? Play-Doh has no form, right? But it's not the formlessness that's important. It's the quality of it. So the point is Brahman is transcendental. Brahman is full of qualities. So when those are just interacting themselves, we're not involved. You know, we can see it, we can appreciate it, but we're not involved. As soon as we get involved, then we're dealing with Paramatma. You know, and then that personal aspect is there, but localized. You're only accepting an aspect of the personality. Bhagavan means you accept the whole package. Yes?
So especially the Buddhists and the Mayavadis, they will not admit that Brahman has any activity at all.
No activity, no qualities, no nothing.
It's just Maya that's having activities.
Yeah. And so the soul doesn't exist, nothing exists. So in their mind, nothing exists. So, but the point is, if nothing exists, then what's the trip? Why do you have to make so much endeavor? You know what I'm saying? What, if nothing exists, what's wrong with, you know, being happy in the nothing? Why do you have to be so unhappy in the nothing and try to get yourself to the state of nothingness so that you'll be happy? But if all there is nothing, how can there be happiness? Happiness is a quality. So why would there be any happiness in nothingness? You know what I'm saying? So even their philosophy is contradictory, but it works for their mundane logic. Because the mundane logic means you're using intelligence, but intelligence won't be used purely on its own. It'll always be used in connection with the mind. Does that make sense? So being connected to the mind, then you have what you want. You want to be happy, and this world makes you unhappy. So you want a situation that gets that you're happy and that it's not connected with the world. So basically just how to get rid of the world. So it's forms, it's this, it's that, get rid of all that, then I'll be happy. But the point is we define happiness by, you know, removal of something. So here all they're doing is, instead of removing the obstacle, you're just removing the whole material world. But so there's no technical difference between the concept of happiness coming from karma and happiness coming from jnana. The principle is the same. It's non-different. So the spiritual, that's different. Because there you're actually interacting. So these other two are material concepts. Like that. But it's still Krishna. So Brahman and Paramatma are Krishna. They're his aspect. But that's just who he is. But where he interacts with the devotees, that's Bhagavan. So in the spiritual world, no one interacts with the Paramatma and Brahman aspects, because why would you when the Bhagavan is so much greater, much more taste? Does that make sense? You had something? Yeah, was taken care of? Or missed the moment?
Yeah.
In the next sutra, the general character of the jivas is described. Vichara, ragao, chaitana, dharmao, sorupa, prabriti, bhavat. The characteristic nature and the inclination of the sentient beings are cognition and love, respectively. The nature is cognition, and the inclination is love. Right? Because eternality has been established. So the characteristic, just that they exist, everything just exists. So how do you define? Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. Knowledge and love are the characters of the sentient object. Knowledge is described in the following verses. In the Shruti Shastra, it is said, eternity, knowledge, and bliss are part of the soul's nature. In the Vedanta Sutra 413, it is said, the wise know and teach the science of the soul. Every object is endowed with two components, intrinsic form and characteristic nature. The form of the jiva is knowledge, and its nature is, or inclination, is love. The Supreme Lord alone is the object of that love. In the conditioned state of the jiva, this love is applied towards the secondary objects of maya. In this regard, Sri Prahlad declares in Vishnu Purana, "Fools fall in love with what the material senses see. I am not like them. O Supreme Lord, I have fallen in love with you. I always think of you. I pray that you will never leave my heart." So this aspect, the two components, so intrinsic form and characteristic nature. Right? So we see that's always the fundamental, right? The material world. I mean, when we're discussing causation, you have the ultimate, which will be the characteristic, and then you have the intrinsic form that goes with that characteristic. In other words, that characteristic is manifest through the form. Right? So through knowledge, then one is able to express the love. So that knowledge being there, we're talking about chit. So that means that it's being applied in activity based on the situation. Right? According to the situation, you know, and knowledge of that situation, you perform an activity that expresses your love for the Lord. Right? Otherwise, how do you express the love? Right? So if you're going to express it in the present, you have to express it in the environment you're in. And to make sure that that environment is being used to express your love. Right? That requires knowledge. Right? You know, does that make sense? Otherwise, it doesn't come out right. You know, the just beginning, you know, of the, you know, the boys noticing the girls, right? So they want to, in the environment, express their interest. So what do? Throw a rock, pull their ponytail, stick it in the ink. You know, do something that is completely useless and annoying for a, you know, conjugal relationship. So that's lack of knowledge, right? So they're taking the situation and trying to express it doesn't work. Why not? Because they don't have knowledge, right? So this is not knowledge meaning that knowledge of the philosophy. It means knowledge of, means philosophy in the way we're trying to remove ourselves from the material world. This means knowledge of relationship, how it works, right? It's better than a rock, right? Yes, that's why the two have to go together, the characteristic nature and the intrinsic form. Right? And why it uses intrinsic means intrinsic we see from before when it was describing in Varnashram, or where it was describing intrinsic meaning of the nature of the soul, meaning that aspect that doesn't change. So that means that that characteristic nature has an intrinsic form or forms that manifest it. So that's why it's we can't make it up. For the quality of Krishna, Lakshmi has already manifested the intrinsic forms. We follow those forms, then you can appreciate the Lord in that quality. You don't, it doesn't work. Right? So, in other words, the end justifies the means. Isn't that how you say it? Yeah, but it doesn't work. Right? Anybody who quotes that hasn't won. They didn't get the result they wanted. You understand? Because, no, there's the ends establishes the means. Not that the end is good and then the means I use whatever I feel like. No, it means there's intrinsic forms. So the means has forms. So there may be a variety of forms, so therefore you can get variety or according to what's best for that particular situation, you use a particular form. But the two go together. So the intrinsic form, there's knowledge, right? So that will create the field and everything with it. And the characteristic is the expression of love. So the in the material world they're in ignorance, right? And so, and that expression of love has been covered, so now it's lust. So they engage in ignorance to fulfill their own desires. But Prahlad Maharaj says, fools fall in love with the material senses see. But Prahlad Maharaj understands his relationship with the Lord. Therefore, he doesn't hit he's using real knowledge while the others are using ignorance. And therefore, the lust is actual love. So he's working on the actual transcendental platform. Yes.
In the causation, could I say that the intrinsic form would be the material cause?
No, that would be where we're looking. Oh, yeah, on that side it would be the material cause.
And the
characteristic would be the operative cause of the jiva who's performing the work on the material platform. I mean it in the manifestation. But that's the reflection of the original, which is the ultimate cause and the form. Right? Because in other words, if you don't follow the nature, intrinsic nature that material energy provides, it won't work. That's why they have a thing called experiment. Experiment means you don't know, so you just, there's a field, there's a situation. So you try it this way and try it that way until you find something works. Right?
In terms of Sambandha Vidya Prayojana, the intrinsic form of love, intrinsic form would have the Sambandha and the Vidya Vidya.
Here, intrinsic is because knowledge is meaning the Abhideya. So in other words, activity, work, that's the intrinsic nature. The jiva is active. Right? And then the prayojana is that love. But the environment that's situated in is eternal. So when the jiva is eternal, when he understands that, then using the knowledge he expresses the love. Like that? You know what I'm saying? So you can also say intrinsic, you could count, when we say knowledge, you could also include Sambandha into this. Right? So when you say knowledge, you're meaning Sambandha and Abhideya. So you have knowledge of the field and knowledge how to, apply it. And then the love would mean that inspiration, having known the field, and then that ultimate to get the result for Krishna. So you could take it that these two explain the whole thing. So it's not, you know what I'm saying? It's like before what he's saying in the last point. It's not contradictory. Right? If you're looking at Brahman, then you're going to have to end up with a person. If you're looking at the person, then the Brahman aspect is there.
Can we take it also that because the jivas are expanding from the chit within, then its characteristic nature is knowledge?
Yes, that would be there. Then you're looking at it that you're already discussing the soul because it's already situated in eternity. So that's not the intrinsic form is eternity. It's knowledge. That's what creates that uniqueness is that then in that position he acts. Right? So in other words, then that means that the goal is Prayojana, Phaladini. So that situates him as assisting Phaladini.
Instrumental.
He never is Phaladini because his intrinsic form is knowledge, not Ananda, right? Not love. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So like that, you can. Yeah.
He's not what the Lord is looking for. It's what the Lord is using to get what he wants.
No, because the point is that the jiva is assisting in the pastime. So the pastime's nice, and you can expand that by adding more elements. But the point is the contact is already good. So everything else you can add. You know what I'm saying? The meal's nice. You can add things to the environment. Put it in a nicer place, or it's hot out, so put the AC on, or put some music, or some nice conversation. You can add things to it, some lemon, some achar, a nice drink. You can add to it and expand, but it only has meaning if the meal is there. If I sit you down in a nice AC room and have nice conversations and I give you some achar, or a lemon, it's kind of like, what's happening here? You understand? So that's why you can have all the jivas, but it only has meaning when they're connected to the internal potency.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So it's not that he's getting done what he like. He's already happy as it is. It's a matter of expanding happiness. So for him, getting done, because we get something done, but it means it's for ourselves. When Krishna gets something done, being the complete whole, anyone who understands their connection with the Lord is automatically happy. So that's the difference. He doing things for his own happiness makes everybody happy. But the energy, if it does something for itself, then it only makes itself happy. Does that make sense? So it's different. That's why we were discussing before, is that you have specific wording you'd use. Because it means something in one area, but it doesn't mean the same thing in the other. Even though it's a common principle. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So, Mara, but the intrinsic nature of Krishna would be this foolish, right? So, he being happy.
Yes.
Another intrinsic nature.
He's automatically happy.
Now, question. When we hear that, for example, Narottam Das talking about the prem from Gauranga, he's assisting the pastime. Now, because he's seeing this interaction between Radha and Krishna, that through Gauranga Mahaprabhu,
there's no cause, you know what I'm saying? Can't say because he sees, therefore.
I mean, in the sense that he's assisting through.
Yeah, because he's assisting, therefore that, because then you're connected. You're only connected when you're assisting. If you're trying to directly, you're not actually doing. So even you're the one sitting there and doing the puja, there's no one else around, still you're assisting your spiritual master. You think, I'm doing the puja, then not much will be gained. But if you understand, I'm assisting the spiritual master, then so much will be gained. Does that make sense? Yes.
But my logic fails to understand this statement, the form of jiva is knowledge.
Isn't that what we've just been discussing?
Yes, but still somehow like...
Or what's missing? You have to be able to identify what's missing.
I would be able to understand if we would substitute the word form with word situation.
Situation is sambandha.
Yes.
But the point is sambit potency is the active principle. You know what I'm saying? So that's where it's being applied. That's where it's important. You know what I'm saying? You may be situated in knowledge, but they're saying that the intrinsic form is knowledge. Because form is through which you perform, you get activities done. You get your result through form. Right? So with knowledge, then they're able to do so. It's that knowledge of the field that is their form. You know what I'm saying? Sankarshan, he is knowledge. Or Prajumna, he is knowledge. You know what I'm saying? But they're all, you see knowledge is connected to all of them, because you can't, just as you can't separate Bhagavan, I mean, there's a non-difference between Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, right? They're non-different but separate, the same Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. They are non-different but same time separate. Because on the transcendental platform, you don't identify the differences here. Because to the Lord, it's His energy. It's not all these three. It's just like seeing Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana is a technique we use here to identify, so we can tell the difference between matter and spirit and how things function. Because it's a medium that both the internal and the external potency work on. Right? So that means it's the nature of the Sarup Shakti. But Sarup Shakti can work in either way. But, you know, we're just having enough trouble that there's something spiritual, let alone that there's something behind that can act as spiritual or material, depending on how we see, right? So that Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana is the mechanics of how the Lord and His energies function. But that's not what you think about. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, in other words, Shankarshan aspect is the knowledge of the field. Prajumna is also knowledge, because you're dealing with the senses. The sense that you're inspired to engage the senses. Right? You know about the goal. Right? You know about, you know, what's Abhideya. But there's no activity going on. Right? In Sambandha, Jnan, there's no action. There's simply the understanding of the total picture. Right? And though Sambandha Jnan is knowledge in these four parts. Right? Abhideya will be applying it, but it has to be applied with that Sambandha Jnan. Right? So in other words, the form of application means you're using that Sambandha Jnan in the situation. But technically the situation is Sakashan, is Sambandha.
One could say that Jiva is acting through knowledge in this way.
But I would say it's, yeah, but you could also say it's with knowledge. But the point is because this, there, it's also non-different from the jiva. He is sat, chit, and ananda. Does that make sense? Is that better? In his conditioned state, the jiva becomes almost perverted due to various material propensities and attains the present condition of the human beings. In this state, the material mind predominates over the soul, and since the spiritual knowledge is dormant, the sensual experience of the material world is taken to be the real knowledge. But there is great difference between the knowledge of the liberated soul and the so-called knowledge of the conditioned soul. The signs of the unalloyed knowledge are explained in the Katha Upanishad 2.3.10 and 2.3.6 as follows. When the five senses are peaceful, and when the mind and intelligence do not strive for material things, one attains the highest goal of life. This, the wise say. In the course of life, the senses rise and again they set. Aware that he, the soul, is different from the senses, the wise person does not grieve. The love-natured inclination of the soul similarly undergoes perversion in the state of bondage. The following sutra explains this. So now he's pointed out that these two. Now he's saying that, so the knowledge aspect, the form, is what's being brought out. Does that make sense? So now he's going to explain the love. So cognition has been described, now the love.
Can I understand that when the mind reaches this level of function, it's not striving for material things, and it's peaceful, the vibes are peaceful. From that level of contemplation, then I'll be able to see further.
Yes. Means as one becomes purified, you know, in a particular sense or a particular area situation, then one can see so much in that area. But where one's not, then that will be where the cloudiness will be. That's why you can see someone, in some area it appears to be very, very advanced, but in another area is not so much. Like that. So it's just where the purification is taking place, where the...
The complete picture is not like a plateau, but more like a mountain range, where one part is high and another part is low.
Can be, yeah, because it's like that's because you're conditioning. There may be some elements that are already more favorable. You know, the person's gentle by nature, or kind, or respects authority, or is active personality. So these may be areas where, in the devotional, you know, endeavor, that they'll you know, excel in. You know, because for them that's easy. Someone else, it's more of a problem. So they immediately see, okay, there's authority, work with authorities that, like this, and so then very quickly then they get someone else's, they have problem with authority just because that's their background. You know, does that make sense? You know, but it's something else that they don't have a problem with. You know, they very much appreciate, you know, Krishna, you know, the absolute nature of Krishna's prasad, so they're able to, you know, absorb themselves very nicely there. Yeah, but let's see. The other person, he's very nice, he's all this, but, you know, his mother was so busy, you know, doing charity work and all these other things and at the spa and all these social functions that she didn't cook and this and that, and so he doesn't really have an appreciation for food or something. You know, so he doesn't worry about it or think it's so important or... You know what I'm saying? So it's automatically is due to the conditioning, some areas may go quicker than another. That's why it's important to be able to understand is they can all these aspects can move separately. Does that make sense? Because whenever an endeavor is taken up, we'll get into that tomorrow morning. In the when it's talking about anartha nivritti, there's a pattern that it goes through. So even you take up anything new, it goes through that pattern. You know what I'm saying? It always goes through that pattern of what will be the mentality in the beginning, in the middle, and an end. So it doesn't change. You know what I'm saying? Though one major part of one's life may be, you know, going through the thing, but anything else is also going through those. You always have the bigger cycle, but within that bigger cycle are all the smaller cycles. You know, so all that's going on at once. Because otherwise it was so obvious, then we would have figured out and gotten bored a long time ago. And then what do you do? Okay? Well, you know, we're not attracted by the spiritual and we found the material to be boring. So what's left? Right? Buddhism. And then, you know, so that's for people who don't have any inspiration. Right? So then, that's it. You know, what else do you do to keep the living entity busy? And why does he have to be kept busy? Why does he get bored?
The
soul is active by nature. That's so when we say knowledge, we mean applied knowledge, the activity.
Or video game.
Like that, yeah.
Keep your thought active.
I wonder if they had a video game of, you know, attaining nirvana, so all the things, obstacles you have to get over and get past, and all these different things.
But at the end, it gets boring.
Huh?
At the end, it gets boring.
True. Yeah. Okay. You had something. The moment's
just
gone.
Comment, no.
Okay. Lost the moment.
I'll say it this time. No, it seems like this happens because we have a tendency to work with what we're already good at, and what we're not so good at, we kind of leave that aside. So this cloudiness has a tendency to stay.
Yeah, could be. Yeah, that would work. And then when you do become aware of it, it's not very developed. So it starts at these earlier stages. Yes.
So in this regard, so sometimes the spiritual master may give us some service which is very congenial to our nature. And can you also sometimes give a service which will make us face our limitation in the anartha?
If you can handle it. You know what I'm saying? So the point is what's it going to work nicely? Then that's what's done. Because even if you're given what you're comfortable with, there's still obstacles. You still have plenty of opportunity to test it, especially if you're good at it and everybody else, not only are they not good about it, they don't even understand why we should be doing it. You know, so there's plenty of opportunity no matter what one does. You know, so it's not that, no, but they're doing what they're good at, but I'm doing what I'm not good at, so that's better. Does that make sense? So it's like in Bushido, you know, so is it more, would it be more following the law of Bushido? Which means, of course it is, that you have a good master, and so you're following them properly. You don't know what Bushido is. No one knows what Bushido is. Bushido is the code of the samurai.
Okay.
Right? Because the samurai is a warrior. They work under an authority. Right? So is the samurai working under a good working well, loyally under a good authority, then that's, you know, natural. But would it be more of a symptom of Bushido that he is loyal to even to a master who's not good? Right? Because then it's difficult, but so you're still having to be loyal. So that's, you know, the mundane thing. Of course, if he's not good, why would you want to be loyal to him? Find someone who's good and then apply the Bushido there. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of, it's not a matter of finding these more, you know saying, well, you know, they eat the shot, but, you know, I eat it, you know, without my hands, so that's better, you know. And the other thing is, well, yeah, but you eat it with your hands off the floor. I eat it out of a bucket without my hands, you know. Like that. It says, well, that's nothing. You know, I turn the bucket upside down, you know. So it just gets, you know what I'm saying? So those things are always, I think you have your, in England, you have your typical where the blokes, you know, talk about how bad it used to be, you know.
That's the Monty Python.
Just saying that's. Yeah.
Half an hour before you go to
bed. So like that. But the thing is it's, you have that element that, you know, the worst you can make it, then that must be its, you know. But still, that's, you know, the mode of ignorance. So it means. It's already enough trouble in the mode of goodness. You don't have to add to it. Does that make sense?
So it's not recommended to challenge us?
No, one challenges within an area that one can do. The point is if one can increase one's service by challenging the platform at which you regularly perform your duties. But that's the idea of festivals. Festivals means you challenge. You know, the fasting is there, or fasting is longer. You know, you do more activity. You're doing outside of your standard level. So then from that, then you can see if you can increase your daily level. Right? But if it was great, but it was too different, then you stick at your level. And then as that becomes easy, you naturally integrate. That's the idea. So it's naturally. But now if you can see that I could do more, and you make the attempt and you can do it, great. But if you can't, at least you made the attempt. Now you know. You go back to what was before that worked and continue with that until the natural knowledge and detachment allow you to do more.
So on a day-to-day basis, this is generally something we would take up with authority.
Yeah. You know, unless it's obvious to you. You know, like that. You know, you you wouldn't have to probably ask the authority that, you know, you're getting up and taking an hour to get ready in the morning, that you've just figured out how you can do it in 45 minutes. I don't think you have to go to him and ask if it's okay.
I was thinking the whole challenging yourself thing.
But still, it's a challenge. 15 minutes, that's a big challenge. Come on. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if it's something that's may be a difficulty, then that's another thing. But it's like, you know, you decided, you know, you're going out of Sankirtan 6 hours, and now, you know, you want to go out for 23 hours. And so you might ask the authority. You know, you might do, you know, you thought of 24, but you thought that was too extreme. Gugarva Goswami didn't sleep like that, but, you know, he had a problem that his eyes were always bug eyes, so that might bother the people when you're talking to them. So, therefore, you might want to, you know, go to sleep so that you don't always stare at them. Like that. You know, because when you tell them, how come your eyes are like that? Well, I haven't slept in, you know, 3 months, and they might freak out. You know, so you're saying I read these books and I'm going to become like you? That wouldn't be the. I mean, that may be the European. The American would be. Would you mind sleeping while I go through your wallet? Yeah. Okay, Sutra 17. Pare nurakti swabhaviki shreyaskari cha itaratesh Shranu Padiki Dukkha Pradacha. Page 26. Oh, you're there. Love for the Supreme is natural, spiritual, and brings the highest bliss. Love for what is not the Supreme is artificial, material, and brings only suffering. This is confirmed in Sri Ishupanishad, Mantra 13. It is said that one result is obtained by worshipping the Supreme Cause of all causes, and that another result is obtained by worshipping what is not supreme. That all this is heard from the undisturbed authorities who clearly explain it. So undisturbed means what it says, when the five senses are peaceful and when the mind and intelligence do not strive. Right? So that's Katha Upanishad. And then this is Mantra 13 of Ishopanishad. So all saying the same knowledge. So he says, you know, heard from undisturbed authorities, which means when the five senses are peaceful. Right. So there's always there's a continuity between all of them, or not a continuity. You know, where they all say the same thing. Consistent, yeah, consistent. I knew it started with a C. I came up with continuum, but I thought that wasn't it. In his purport to Mantra 7, Srila Prabhupada writes, the spiritual entities are meant for enjoyment, as stated in the Vedanta Sutra 1.1.12, Anandamayo Bhyasata. By nature and constitution, every living being, including the Supreme Lord, and each of his parts and parcels, is meant for eternal enjoyment. Here it says spiritual energies. Right? It doesn't say the living entity or the Lord or his internal, it just says living entities. Spiritual living entities are meant for enjoyment. That's just what they do. What was that? We said characteristic nature. The living entities who are engaged in the material tabernacle are constantly seeking enjoyment, but they are seeking it on the wrong platform. Apart from the material platform is the spiritual platform, where the Supreme Being enjoys himself with his innumerable associates. On that platform, there is no trace of material qualities, and therefore that platform is called Nirguna. On the Nirguna platform, there is never a clash over the object of enjoyment. Here in the material world, there is always a clash between different individual beings, because here the proper center of enjoyment is missed. The real center of enjoyment is the Supreme Lord, who is the center of the sublime and spiritual rasa dance. We are all meant to join him and enjoy life with one transcendental interest and without any clash. That is the highest platform of spiritual interest. And as soon as one realizes this perfect form of oneness, there can be no question of illusion, mohan, or lamentation, shoka. Right? Did you catch what we were discussing this morning? Right? We were discussing this morning how Prabhupada uses terms and, you know, language that we could understand, but he just said there is that we're supposed to be in the rasa dance. And this is Ishopanishad. Right? So that's why we don't brook statements where people are saying that Prabhupada only gets the basis. Someone else is now going to give us all the juicy stuff. Like that. No, he's just said it in here, but he's actually given the practical way how you're actually going to get it. By giving up the attachment to the material body. And they'll say, no, just by reading the pastimes, it'll go. That's nice, but if there's no space in your consciousness for, you know, because of material enjoyment, how much are you going to get from the other? Does that make sense? So as one gives up the material attachment, then one is able to appreciate the spiritual. Right? That's the point. If the space is taken up by lust, how much space is left for love? Right? You know, this is where the point, the example of the glass comes in. Because it's like that. You can't put, it's not that you have this glass full of of ink, and then you can also have it completely full of unlimited milk. No. It's got ink in it, it's got milk in it, or it's mixed, or it's got milk in it. You know, it's straightforward, these things.
Also, I remember once you were speaking about American family, 4 people, cat living in a big house, and an Indian family, 30 people in the same house. Mm-hmm. The center is
Dhabi. Yeah, yeah, because the center is Krishna, yeah. Yeah, the others, otherwise it's a problem. It only works because they have, you know, 4 people and 4 televisions. Right? So, you know. Right. Yeah, well, I think when we were in Hong Kong, in the temple there, it's, you know, it's an apartment, living room. I'm not sure what it had. I think there were 2 bedrooms. I think there was. But the problem is I never went in the other bedroom, so I don't know. Because that was the Swami's room, so I know. And then there was a bathroom and a kitchen. And I think there was kind of a little side room. You know, so it was, you know, a decent-sized apartment. And when the Chinese would come and visit, they would be shocked that only 3 people were living there. Because if it was them, there'd be at least 20, you know. You know, and that's everybody's like that, so it's not that. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. Love for the Supreme Lord is the natural inclination of the jivas. This natural relationship between the soul and the Lord can be compared with the magnetic attraction of the iron. Of the iron. Oh, he's talking about examples. The magnetic attraction of iron. Okay, so it means to the magnet. Or the burning power of fire. It means fire and then its ability to... Okay, so. Just as the mentioned qualities are closely related to the respective objects, the jivas are naturally related to the Supreme Lord by the tie of love. Right? Because there's a connection, there's a quality that matches. That's why they're so... the two go together so well. Like if you say the fire burns something up, no one goes, what? You know? If I say, what happened to it? Well, my car burnt it up. It's kind of like, how did your car burn it up? You know? Does that make sense? So there's a natural connection. So the jiva and the Lord are naturally connected.
So the Lord would be the magnet, the giving it to the iron, and the magnetic attraction would be slow.
Yeah, I mean, it's just naturally the living entity is attracted to its source. Material attachments of the embodied soul are the perverted state of the divine love. When this faculty of the jiva becomes free of propensities, it shines as divine love. So when it says free of propensities, it means free of the material inclination, right? The impersonal is to take this... free of propensity, see, when it does nothing, then it will come to the transcendental problem. But it means when it does nothing material. That's why we saw before is that these pastimes are nirguna. You know, we just spent so much time discussing how Brahman is saguna. But it means nirguna means it doesn't have any material qualities. The rasa dance is nirguna. There's no material qualities. So here's the thing we say, it's nirguna, but there's people there and they're doing activities and interacting. Then one would have to think, but if it's nirguna, how are these qualities there? Yeah, those are spiritual qualities. Nirguna means without material qualities. Love is the only inclination of the soul. Only its name changes according to the variation of propensities. For example, the attachment for wealth is called greed. Attachment to female beauty is called lust. When the same attachment is manifest to distressed people, it is called kindness. Attachment shown towards brothers and sisters is called affection. And when it is applied towards the benefactor, it's called gratitude. When this inclination is favorably manifested, it's called love. And when it's unfavorably manifested, it's called enmity. In this way, the same single inclination of the jiva is transformed into various forms. this inclination of the soul remains in its unalloyed nature only for the liberated souls, where it can reach infinite excellence. Yes?
That's why everything we, when you're explaining prayojana, especially in terms of material activities, what is gained is always an experience, which is basically either love or one of its perverted reflections.
Yeah, well, in the material world, it's all perverted.
It's always a feeling.
Yeah, that's always. Because prayojana means an experience. Sambandha is an experience, and prayojana is experience. Abhideya is the activity that will generate that. Right? Because even you're analyzing the field, you're still you're doing something. Therefore, the situation will give you an experience. That experience is that of potential. Right? It's potential. No? Right. So here, when it is favorable, it's called love. When it's unfavorable, it's called enmity. We're working within the material. Right? Like that. But at the same time, as if it's favorable to Krishna, it's called love. And if it's not favorable to Krishna, it's enmity. So the principle is that.
I think this paragraph is very genius.
It is. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakura is considered a genius. He's the one who introduced preaching Krishna consciousness into the Western environment. Because before that, everyone was preaching to the followers of the Vedic culture. They weren't writing for people who weren't followers of the Vedic culture. Right? And there wasn't really a need to be, because the prominence of the Vedic culture was so strong. But with the British coming in, they were, you know, you could say the only influence that changed the value system, the lifestyle, the way of thinking. You know, Mughals come in, it doesn't change that, well, hey, they got something great. Because when they came in, anything good in the Vedic culture, they took on themselves. Right? Does that make sense? It means Mughal, right? Mughal means guy, horse, riding around in the steppes, right? Like that. So, where's all the fancy music, the this, the that, the nice dress, and all that that we see Akbar is wearing? Where did that come from? It's the Vedic culture. It's the Vedic music, it's Vedic culture, dress, food, everything, all like that. The spicy, all that, it's all there. So there's not really a threat, it's just a matter of the theology, you know, is it impersonal or personal or this or that? But that's anyway, you have the Vedic culture, and then you have the philosophy. So it's not really much of a problem. But the British come in, and because of the attitude, they consider themselves superior. And so, therefore, they work to change the culture of the Indians. The Mughals just gained it. And once they've gained it, then they would, you know, harass the Hindus for it, because they've already taken out what they want. They're saying with the Britishers, it's a different thing. So people are changing the mode and lifestyle and basis. So he's using this principle we see the Prabhupada, you know, uses, is that of using logic to explain it. You know, in other words, you have the thing where you just take the you know, based on the shastras and all that, you do. So he'll give that. Prabhupada will give that. But so much emphasis will just be making it accessible by giving, you know, the explanation so that one can appreciate it through one's, you know, just common faculties. Right? Because, in other words, you could say, give an example of something Vedic or something like this. He uses the examples from the Vedas. But you would just refer to something, and then that would explain it. Right? Like Prabhupada doesn't use grammatical explanations generally. Because it doesn't mean anything. In the Veda, you just say it's like this, and then, oh, okay, now I understand. Does that make sense? So he's the one that you know, made this bridge between the Vedic presentation into the Western environment. Because what he's working with is the you know, basically your intelligentsia of India, who has taken up British kind of perspectives and values. You know, that's who's, so they're, you know, the four, you know, we're not talking about your, you know, average bloke on the street here. You know. So the ones he's writing this for would be like nowadays your, you know, your big politicians, your big intellectuals, your big educators, your big scientists, your big, like that. That was the class of people he was moving with. Yes.
On this topic, Maharaj, some of books by Bhaktivinoda are not recommended to Vaishnavas because they are like very much targeted to preach to the audience.
Who says they're not recommended for Vaishnavas?
That they present some parts of the philosophy.
Now, are you falling prey to the point that he was saying here is the neophyte. Some of the Kanista followers of the great sages raise controversies due to their incomplete understanding. Are you falling prey to this phenomenon?
I want to make sure to avoid it.
Who says there's books of Bhaktivinoda Thakur that Vaishnavas avoid?
We did not avoid, but should not take everything written there so much literally.
Yes, that's this point being made over here. I'll leave it again. But some of the Kanista followers of the great sages raise controversies due to their incomplete understanding. You know what I'm saying? He's written for those audiences, but what he's giving is the absolute truth. That's what he's so expert with. That's what Prabhupada's so expert with. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Is that they can explain in that Western environment or a non-Vedic environment that it makes sense, you know, on the transcendental devotional platform. Now, let us say the person would have the potential to appreciate Krishna consciousness, but they have some mundane issues on a particular point. Right? Let us say they have issues with the caste system. So if I say anything like Brahman, oh, but then we're doing this and that, and then where's the conversation? Are we discussing about the Supreme? Or are we just discussing social issues? Right? So, in your preaching, until you've gotten enough foundation, what would you do?
Avoid it or just
okay.
Protect it from the spiritual point of view?
Yeah. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur does. So now if...
I would avoid it in conversation or present spiritual point of view of oneness.
Yeah, so therefore you just don't use those terminologies and you either you use other examples or, you know, go to the principle behind it. Okay? So that's what he's doing. But unless you know enough, because it says here incomplete knowledge, incomplete understanding, right? So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur opens, let's say like, I think it's something called the Bhagavat or something like that, he says, it's a lecture given to a crowd of, I think, Britishers, you know, and Indian intellectuals and that kind of thing. You know, some kind of meeting like this, you know. And so he makes the point that the descriptions given in the scriptures about hell are imaginary. Okay, would that be a good enough one?
I was thinking about this example.
You were thinking about this example.
I wanted to ask it in the previous sutra, but not enough connections.
He's got his list of issues. Yeah. Can we get it in here? It's in there. We'll take this and split it. Okay. Okay. So then one would say, well, that's against our philosophy. Right? No? That would be the general tendency, right?
Well, the literal meaning.
Yes. You know? know, and he's the authority on grammatical literal meanings. So he says, yes, on that it would be. So you can take it as truth, right? Okay? So now...
on the most conventional use of the term.
And unconventional? He says imaginary. So what comes to your mind when I say imaginary?
Subway.
Huh? Subtle?
It's a mental experience.
It's a mental experience? No. These are, but when I say it's imaginary. It's not real. That's what will come. So everyone in that audience will say it's not real. Because that's what they're thinking. So that he said that, hey, he's one of us. And now when he starts talking about the Bhagavad, they're going to listen. Because their first thing is, well, you're talking all that, but, you know, they talk about hell, and this is all, you know, but how is this real? How is this... Right? So immediately he said something that the audience is going to relate and feel that they have a connection. Right? So it's not just... He's using a point of rhetoric. Right? But more importantly, when the soul leaves the body, what goes with him?
The mind.
The mind. And what's another term we use for that group of mind, intelligence, and falsity? Subtle body. So it's a body, but it's a subtle body. Right? And so it's made out of mind. That's the main thing. Now, when you go to the hellish planets, or a hellish region, then when they're going to punish you, then how long would a body made out of the gross elements last? You know, not long enough. You know, so you got a hundred thousand years of being thrown off a mountain. It's kind of a problem. You know, then they have to sit around and wait for the guy to be born again and like that. And, okay, he's so cute and small, let him grow up a little bit more. Okay, now grab him. It's a really slow process. So therefore, they cover the subtle body with special material that the subtle body is able to appreciate the punishment, but it's not a body that's destroyed. So they can throw you off the mountain and then come down and pick you up and drag you to the top and throw you off again. Right? So what are they dealing with in actuality? The mind. And anything with, when you say it's purely the mind, it's imaginary. Because imaginary means it's in the mind, it's not physical. So for most people, it's imaginary means it's not real. So all the Britishers will think it's not real. But he hasn't said anything against their philosophy. So the neophytes who don't know enough, they'll get confused. Right? Does that make sense? So Krishna Samhita is full of that. That's why it said it's a book for the muddlers. So if you read it and you get confused, you weren't supposed to read it. And if you read it and go, okay, this is how I deal with these guys, then it's okay, you read it.
So it teaches you the rhetoric of preaching.
In that particular environment where you have people who have issues against the Vedic literatures, right? You know, say about, you know, the Nadiyagendra, say they were some kings, you know, so why talk about getting distracted off of the absolute truth because they have issues with something. And those issues are based on the conditioning. It's not based on something spiritual. It's not like, you know, you're saying Vaishnavism and they're you know, quoting from, you know, Karma Mimamsa or Patanjali or, you know, like that. And there you have, no, this is that they don't accept the literatures at all. They have a problem. So you just avoid those. So they say, if this comes out, oh, that's this. If that's that, that's that. You know, just to get rid of it so that they stick to the point. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, which would be more important? If a person chants Hare Krishna and takes prasad, or that he has so many issues about so many things that we do in the temple. Right? So don't worry about that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is that it's...
Yes, but how would you do that? How would you like to be free?
Yeah, Prabhupada would do that all the time. He would just... I mean, something that is going to distract... If it's us saying it, we'll say that. It's just we like to keep clean, because it is supremely pure. But the clean here is the non-attachment. They're not going to understand all that. So therefore, it's not the point. because they'll try to catch on externals. But the point, Krishna consciousness, is the transformation of the consciousness of the living entity from lust to love, you know, from ignorance to knowledge. To it means there's no other way. That's how Mahabharata opens, is that Suta Goswami spoke according to his audience, which were the sages. Like that. You know, so who is down at the Ganga when Parikshit Maharaj and Sukadev Goswami are discussing?
All the sages of the universe.
Yeah, so that means all the Paramahamsas. So who is it being spoken to? So that's the whole idea, is that speaking to the audience is totally, because that means you understand the field. If you don't speak to your audience, it means you don't understand the field. That's why sometimes you use the same Sankirtan line and it works great, because it matches the feel. Sometimes you use the same line and then people just look at you and says, you know, do you mean that? Or, you know, what, you know, it's like, because that doesn't match them. Yes.
So it's not deflecting to say something like, that's not really important, like someone has something.
Yeah, because if you're not important, then they're going to get upset. You know, so I'm a mature adult, I have this doubt, so why it's not important? Yeah, so that topic's not to discuss. When they understand Krishna consciousness, then you could discuss the detail. Yeah, so you just avoid it. But he uses these techniques that are very, just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. When they ask him, you know, where did the soul fall from? He said, Brahman. That's it. Conversation's finished. No one will ask one more question. Right? But if you try to explain it with more, like that, the conversation goes on eternally. You know, but they don't understand, where do you fall from? You fall into the material world. You know, point is when you're falling, then there's that, you know, the final. When I say, let's say the guy fell out of the 10th, there's a 50-story building, but he fell out of the 10th story. So when I ask, where did he fall from? I don't say the building. I say the 10th story. Right? If I say he fell from the building, yeah, but where in the building? You know, did he fall out of the basement or something like that, and, you know, hit his head on the way up, or, you know, he's like that, you know, so, you know what I'm saying? He says the 10th floor. So it's the point of exact falling into. So the point is the jivas are injected from the glance of Mahavishnu into the, material world, into the pradhan. Pradhan transforms into mahat. Mahat is called Vasudeva Sattva, which is the Brahman platform. Then when Krishna already creates, and then when Brahma creates, then you're given a position. You fall from the Mahat into that conditioned situation. So that's where you actually fell from, was Brahman. So I say that, it's true. So they'll take a true Brahman, because when we say it, we'll say Brahman means Brahma Jyoti. He didn't say Brahma Jyoti. He said Brahman. Because the material energy, this rock is Brahman. My rocks are bad. Does that make sense?
That's why you're so peaceful.
Yes, my rocks are bad. You have something to work with. You know.
Adding depth to the glasses.
Huh?
Adding depth.
Yes,
to the
glasses. Otherwise I have to pick this up. You know. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki, Janata Gaura Prema.